All right, welcome back. Hour number three on Monday night. I am really very grateful, but I'm kind of surprised that Mitch Henderson is back with us live tonight. He'll be off next week, but he's come back. He really cares about what he's doing, trying to help all of us understand the big picture, geopolitically, militarily. Mitch lost his son recently in a terrible car crash. It wasn't his son's fault, and he's been trying to deal with that. And those of you out there listening who have lost children, you understand. That's a wound that never heals. I can't imagine it. And very grateful that Mitch is here. He stays busy trying to keep his mind on other things. He does care about all of us and what's happening in the world. And I'm very glad to have you back, Mitch. Thanks for being here.
Well, good to be here. So let me just say this, since this is Memorial Day.
Yes.
Okay. In 1944, my cousin, Andy Marinko, hit the beach in Saipan with the United States Marine Corps and was killed in action fighting the Japanese Imperial Army.
Right.
In 1970, my brother-in-law, Sergeant Russell Dale Shule, 25th Infantry Division, was in the invasion of Cambodia and was killed in action there in Cambodia. So that's two relatives. I want to do that. And then this Memorial Day weekend, I buried my son, Army Specialist Evan Henderson, a military intelligence guy who was in Korea on the DMZ. He was in the 10th Mountain Division. He worked with the Defense Intelligence Agency to support the 10th Mountain with intelligence in Afghanistan. He was a decorated soldier. And I laid him to rest in Florida National Cemetery this Memorial Day weekend.
Wow.
I just
wanted
to
thanks
make that
for sharing that. Thank you. I'm kind of speechless. Many of you out there have probably lost ones in times of war and military operations as well. And it's when I remember when I was a kid, Memorial Day really had a lot of impact. We need to remember these people. And I know that blood relatives certainly do and friends do, but it is not enough, in my opinion, being done to honor their sacrifice. And this can be said for soldiers from all countries who fall in combat. They're all giving the ultimate, and that's the truth. Well, I'm sure I can speak for everyone out there, Mitchell. They send their best to you. They care.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes,
all
the
right.
People in national cemeteries, they gave their todays for our tomorrows.
Indeed. Very well said. And that's the truth. There is a story I want to start with here before we get to Mitch's regular lengthy and highly informative monologue. They always are great. But there was a big deal. And I'm to the point now where I honestly don't know what it would take. Maybe a direct hit on the Kremlin to get Vladimir Putin and Russia to respond in an appropriate manner to the constant, it's not just prodding the bear now. The bear is being stabbed. There was an attack, an American attack. I don't care what the Ukrainians say. It's all done by U.S. weapons, U.S. approval, U.S. guidance trajectory, U.S. targeting information, all the rest of it. We have an early warning system to try to warn Americans of incoming missiles expected to be nuclear. The Russians have the same thing. One of their key facilities, one of their over-the-horizon radars that was in southwestern Russia, not far from the Ukraine battlefront, was hit by at least two drones, if not more. What was hit wasn't the actual radar itself. It was the logistics buildings where the people worked. And one of them has a huge hole in the side of it. We've had the pictures running. This, to me, is a big deal. Now, Ukraine is claiming more drone strikes on Russia's damaged radar station. Here's a 4-5 minute video. I'm going to play this. It's Professor Glenn Deason on a little talk show. And let's listen to what he says about the gravity of hitting Russia with that kind of an attack. This is a very well-informed man.
Who's a professor of international relations at the University of Southeastern Norway, joining us live from Oslo. Glenn, pleasure to have you here. Always nice to speak with you. Have we just seen a new escalation in the war, which seemed to be going all in Russia's favor in the recent months?
Have we seen a major escalation in the war, which are being perpetrated against Russia routinely in the last several months? Yes.
This is a huge escalation, and this has always been the path we're going towards, because the Ukrainian army, as we now seen over the past few weeks, has begun its slow collapse. And the dilemma for NATO is obviously, does it escalate or start negotiations? And this is truly an amazing escalation, because this also this strike against Russia's Armavir radar station. It's, as you mentioned, this is part of Russia's nuclear early warning system to warn Russia if NATO launches a nuclear first strike. So what we see now is Russia is already in the middle of a tactical nuclear weapons exercise, and it's not unreasonable to expect that Russia will now place its nuclear armed forces on high alert. Furthermore, there's an immense pressure building now on Russia to actually begin to retaliate against NATO at some point, because I think the wider context is quite important. We see now that Anthony Blinken in the United States has green-lighted the use of long-range American ATACMS missiles against Russian territory.
Blinken is one of the biggest worms, a maggot, in American political history. He is sickening.
War territory. This is in addition to that fact that the Americans are already providing the intelligence and assisting with target selections. So it's also very likely that U.S. advisors assists with these complex weapon systems, as we've heard in certain leaks already. Now, we already have proxy wars in the past where each side target each other's soldiers through a proxy. But this is very different. This kind of direct attacks on the territory of another nuclear power is something we've never seen before. This is the United States actively and directly assisting in attacking Russian territory, and also going now after its strategic nuclear defenses. So I think, furthermore, we have to see that the NATO Secretary General, Jens Stoltenberg, he also calls now for using NATO long-range weapons to strike inside Russian territory.
Yes.
This is as close as one can get to declaring war, in my opinion, so without actually stating it. So this is extremely, extremely dangerous.
Glenn, the real faces are gradually emerging from behind those proxies that we had seen till now. Now, the alleged strikes in Armavir is deep inside Russian territory. These strikes have come shortly after Russia released visuals of its tactical nuclear drills in the same southern military district from where they are being carried out. Now, should Russia have prepared for such strikes? Because there were statements which had, though I would consider them hints, which came, first they came from David Cameron when he said it's up to Ukraine to use those Storm Shadow missiles to target Russia. And then Blinken suggested something similar in the recent past as well, indicating that Ukraine can target inside Russia with Western missiles that they have. Do you feel Russia should have anticipated something? And do you think they were prepared for a strike so far deep inside Russian territory? How do you feel they're going to respond?
Well, obviously, they were prepared to some extent, given these threats by the British and the Americans to attack Russian territory. But and there's also a clear indication that a lot of these missiles which have been sent have been intercepted. So these American and British missiles, the Russians use electronic warfare to disrupt their signals. They also have interceptive missiles to strike some, but some things gets through every now and then. And it's worth noting that already in the past, there's been attacks on Russian military bases deep inside Russian territory, key strategic bases, such as Engels military base, where they're hosting nuclear weapons, which are likely the ones to be used in a retaliatory strike if the U.S. and the British use nuclear weapons against Russia. So it's very hard, again, to overstate how significant this escalation is on the side of NATO, that, again, this is very much unprecedented. And this is why one can also argue that the world has never really been any closer than this. to nuclear war before. At least during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was an interest in both sides to de-escalate. This time, there's not even diplomacy. And frankly, the many sides now are openly calling for a direct war. This is extremely alarming. Yes.
Well, he, I think, summed it up perfectly. I just don't know how much longer Russia will be able to not retaliate substantially. Let me just leave it at that. By the way, the attacks on Russian soil have not just been Russian military facilities. There was one airfield hit, and I believe one or two of Russia's supersonic bombers were destroyed or vastly damaged and turned into junk in one of those attacks on one military airfield. And then there have been a number of attacks on Russian oil refineries, which have been knocked out. So we go back to the same thing. How much more will Russia tolerate before doing something to respond? And with no diplomacy in the works, no de-escalation being discussed at all, the clock is ticking. No question. Tick, tick, tick.
Okay, so let me try to put this into some perspective, okay? So
sure.
Russia has early warning radar systems, okay? It's not just one kind. It's it's redundant, and it's layered. Their main radar system is the Voronezh, Voronezh DM radars, and these are strategic radars. They have a range of 5,000 miles, and that's further than it is from Moscow to Washington, D.C. That's farther than
One thing I might add to that astonishing distance is that this system can track, I think it's 500 different incoming projectiles, huge.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, and they could be as small as a football they can detect. And
wow.
This is their strategic radar. Now, keep in mind that this is long-range radar. So it's not looking from the radar 900 miles out, it's not looking for anything. They're looking for things in the distance. It's an early warning radar, okay?
Got it.
They have plenty of those. Now, the 29B6 container radar has a range of only 1,864 miles. It is to cover just like the Black Sea, the Mediterranean, Western Europe. It's not meant for early warning of nukes coming from America. That's not its job. The job of the 29B6 container radar was to cover the airspace of Ukraine. And Ukraine wanted to knock it out because it's good for Ukrainian air defense to knock that radar out. Okay. So this was more of a tactical radar and close in. It's not meant for spotting our nukes coming to them. So when the Ukrainians knocked the 29B6 container radar out, it did not affect their ability to see our nukes coming at them. It did not affect that at all. Okay, and the Voronezh is just one type. Russia actually has radars that can detect our stealth aircraft. Absolutely detect our stealth aircraft. So they have radar that can pick up everything. And they have redundant systems. So
right.
Russia knows this. So let me tell you that the attack that was not in the press, that was important and substantial. And that was they hit the Ukrainians tried to attack a Voronezh radar system in Orsk, okay, which is over by like Kazakhstan and stuff, all right?
Okay.
Okay, why is that significant? Because that is a detector of long-range strategic nuclear weapons coming in. Okay, Russia will not stand, what they will not stand for is us using the Ukrainians to knock out their nuclear early warning systems. That they will not stand for. Okay, the attack on Orsk was an attack like that. It failed. It did no damage whatsoever, but they did attack it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That Russia is not going to put up with. If they knock out an early warning radar that spots missiles coming from the United States, it's war. That is an attack on a radar system that tracks incoming missiles is a nuclear war attack. That is worthy of starting a nuclear war for. If we knock out their eyes, then they have to assume that we are going to launch on
something's
them. They have
coming.
To assume that.
That's right. Yep.
Right. So if we're blinding them, it means something's coming. That could cause them to go ahead and launch a nuclear war against the West. So while we're busy with this one in Moldova is not the country, it's just the province in Russia, southwest of Moscow, where this system was at. So it's not talking about the Russia, it's just a different place. So and they said, well, it was one of a kind. Well, yeah, it was one of a kind, but it was important for operations in Ukraine, but it's not really important for operations to defend the country against thermonuclear war. So this is why you don't see Russia reacting. Russia is more concerned with the attack on Orsk than it is with the attack on this radar.
Very interesting. The Orsk attack.
So let's just say if they succeed in destroying the Orsk radar, radar system in Orsk, Russia would have launched the war on the United States. Ukraine, Zelensky is going to kill you, Americans. He's going to wipe you all out. And guess what? You have sent him the money and the encouragement to do it.
All true. The Orsk attack failed. We're that close. They'll do it again. They're not going to stop, Mitch. Yeah. They're going to keep going until they provoke a response.
Sure.
Next week, next month, tomorrow. I don't know.
So it's just take a little view here, a moment to just talk about who the real president of the United States is. Okay. So Anthony Blinken, first of all, he's Jewish. Also, his grandfather is a Ukrainian Jew from Kiev. Blinken is a Ukrainian name. They came from Ukraine, okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 1994 to 2001, he was on Clinton's National Security Council staff. 2002 to 2009, he was staff director of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, working for committee chairman, Senator Joe Biden. Blinken was instrumental in pushing the war in Iraq, pushing the Democrats into buying into this war. From 2009 to 2013, he was Vice President Biden's national security advisor. Okay, he was very much advocating for the war in Libya, for sending arms to ISIS in Syria, and starting the war in Yemen. He formulated our Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran policies. Notice all these things are abysmal failures, okay?
Yeah.
From 2013 to 2014, he was Deputy National Security Advisor to Obama. From 2014 to 2017, he was Deputy Secretary of State. Okay, this man is the most shallow, the most ignorant, the most, he doesn't have any vision. He has no foresight. In other words, he cannot look ahead to see what the consequences of his actions are. He is incapable of doing that. He is in charge of our foreign policy. He is. Joe Biden is not in control. He is absolutely in charge. He is like the dictator in charge of our foreign policy.
Right.
Okay? So you might even say he's the shadow president. From 2021 to now,
fair enough.
He's Secretary of State and shadow things. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. All of his policies have been failures since 2002. It's brought human suffering to this planet. That is all, okay? He hates Russia. Let me just give you a little statistic here, Americans, to wake you up to something. So we talk about freedom, okay? And freedom usually means freedom to speak, freedom of the press. In 2023, how many people in Russia were given jail sentences for posts on social media? 400. Mm-hmm. How many in the United States were given jail sentences for posts on social media in 2023? 558. Mm-hmm. How many in the United Kingdom were given jail sentences for posting on social media in 2023.
Yes, get ready for this one.
3,300.
Yeah.
3,300, okay? Just think about who the free country is here, okay? You got to remember all this stuff you're told about what's going on in the world comes out of the ass of Anthony Blinken, okay? So, it's just
how
it is.
Another thing about Blinken, if you listen to him speak, I do not believe he is a particularly intelligent individual. He's corrupted. He's beyond biased. And remember when he went to, Tel Aviv or wherever he spoke, and Netanyahu was stage right, he was stage left, as you look at the stage, and he said, I come here today not as Secretary of State, I'm paraphrasing, but I come here as a Jew. He renounced America right there. He stabbed America in the back.
Yes.
That was highest treason. Again, we are seeing the continued normalization of high and highest treason. The border itself should have a couple of dozen people up right now on charges of highest treason and facing capital punishment just for the border catastrophe. But that's not happening because the American people will not demand it, can't demand it, just don't have it anymore. It's not there.
No.
Go right ahead with your presentation, Mitch. Thank you. We're ready. Anything you want to say?
So we're talking about strategic intelligence. We're talking about survival intelligence, and we're on this topic of strategic intelligence. Last time I was talking about strategic depth. So now I'm going to talk about understanding containment, okay? And this is all information so that you can assess what's going on in the world. Since you can't listen to our government or our media, you need to be able to just look for yourself so you can figure out when to run, okay? So containment is about denying other nations strategic debt. It is the policy of placing your military on its borders. It might be regarded as an attack up to your enemy's border. It is the prerequisite to invasion. There is only one possible way to contain the United States, nuclear weapons. Remember that American strategic depth means that our enemies are far away from us. So our ultimate way of containing them is through nuclear weapons. The United States is really the only nation that contains other nations by both conventional and nuclear forces. This should also indicate to you that the United States is the only aggressor nation. We are a threat to the world. The world is not a threat to us. This also explains why World War III will be a nuclear war, because ultimately nuclear war is the only possible way to deter or defeat the United States. It's the only way. So Russia is the largest nuclear power with 5,889 strategic nuclear weapons in 2024. It is the largest in quantity of nuclear weapons and in the quality of nuclear weapons. Just three Russian nuclear weapon systems alone can defeat America's strategic depth and containment capabilities. The Sarmat-46 Satan II intercontinental ballistic missile has many features to defeat our air defenses. First, understand that ICBMs are easier to hit during the active stage of flight, especially during the boost because they are moving slower. The Sarmat-46 has engines that speed up the boost and shorten the window of the active stage. In addition, they have the Mosier anti-missile defense system that sprays out kinetic missiles during the first 5 miles of flight that will destroy incoming missiles that are trying to hit them. Second, the Sarmat can travel under the South Pole and attack our targets from the south. The bulk of American missile defense systems are arrayed along the northern approaches to the United States. This is the Dew Line, or the Distant Early Warning Line in Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. From launch to strike, it takes less than an hour. Before the Sarmat gets anywhere near our air defense systems or even detected by them, it launches three avant-garde Tu-74 hypersonic guided vehicles, each carrying a 20-megaton nuclear warhead, traveling at Mach 27, making them impossible to intercept. and have the added ability to maneuver around any air defense systems to defeat a wall of fire type of defense where a wall of lead is thrown up for them to fly into. Even if the nuke is a dud, it has a kinetic energy of 21 tons of TNT upon impact. Even if the nuke doesn't go off, it will still destroy the point target that it's aiming for. It has three redundant and independent guidance systems to defeat electronic warfare defense systems. Aside from this, the Sarmat is also made of composite materials that reduces its radar signature. When the Avangard glide vehicles are released, a plethora of decoys are also released with them. These weapons were developed to make sure that they can strategically destroy the United States on a first strike. They will destroy it. If they can get just five Avangards to hit Washington, D.C. to destroy our command and control center, New York City to destroy our finance center, Chicago to destroy our food distribution center, Houston to destroy our energy distribution center, and the port of Long Beach in Los Angeles to destroy our largest trade port, they could cripple the United States for a year. That is just five targets. The Russians have 144 of these Avangards to use. Russia will most likely target the following cities to ensure that America cannot quickly recover: Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Norfolk, Charlotte, Charleston, Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa, Atlanta, Louisville, St. Louis, New Orleans, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Omaha, Oklahoma City, Dallas-Fort Worth, San Antonio, El Paso, Albuquerque, Colorado Springs, Denver, Phoenix, Tucson, Las Vegas, San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, Seattle, Honolulu, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Guam. Some of these cities will be targets for China and North Korea, but it is best to have interlocking fields of fire and combat. So that will ensure that many of these cities will be hit. To counter America's containment capabilities, Russia has more than enough nuclear weapons to attack our 400 ICBMs and our strategic air bases, as well as our significant naval bases. To deal with our submarine-launched ballistic missiles, they have the best anti-missile system in the world. They also have bomb and fallout shelters for 80% of their populations, stocked with food, water, and medicine. Russia also has the Poseidon torpedo, which is an unmanned underwater vehicle, a UUV, which is nuclear-powered and has an indefinite range, has several redundant navigation systems and an AI navigation system. It is an autonomous torpedo. It can maneuver itself to the target and actively and in real time evade countermeasures. It can be launched off the coast of China to attack San Francisco. The standoff is indefinite. You do not have to be close to your target. It can carry a 100-megaton nuclear warhead that can, if detonated in fairly shallow water, throw up a 1,500-foot tidal wave. They have salted these bombs with cobalt-60 so that the flood of water will contaminate the flooded coastal cities with radiation to make them unlivable. This should also tell you something. Russia is not interested in seizing American territory or even occupying us. If you have any intention of invading a country, you will not salt the bombs you are dropping on them. This clearly indicates they're not interested in taking American territory. They wouldn't pollute it if they were. At sea, the Poseidon UUV is designed to knock out our carrier groups. The Poseidon can approach our carrier fleets undetected and even detonate before being detected to destroy the entire fleet at one time. So what I mean by that is that they can they do not have to get close enough to the fleet where anybody would see them. If you detonate that 100 megatons, even at a distance, it'll still destroy the fleet. And that would be before we get to see them coming.
Mitch, can you hear me? A couple of notes.
Yes.
On the Poseidon.
This wait a minute. Important.
Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
What happened? Did I shut down? Okay.
No, we're fine. Don't worry about it. A couple notes on the Poseidon.
Yeah.
It can travel 6,000 kilometers underwater. I think it's 5,000 miles or something like that. Anyway, figure 5,000 miles. It can travel underwater at 3,000 feet at over, I think it's over 110 miles an hour. We'll convert it. 110 miles an hour, 3,000 feet deep. It can maneuver this way, that way. It can maneuver any way that it needs to. It's obviously AI propelled and controlled to get to its target. So you think about that. And then think about a 1,500, I've seen 1,900 feet tsunamis. The warhead is dialable. It can be 10 megatons, 50, 100 megatons. I think that's the max. The warhead itself is clad in cobalt-59, which isn't bad in and of itself. But upon detonation, that cobalt-59 becomes cobalt-60, which will permanently make the land, as you said, uninhabitable. Now, my question is, why wouldn't they go for an EMP attack first before turning any of these other things loose? If they bomb us with an EMP, we're knocked back to the 1800s. That, just that quick. And nobody's ready for that. Nobody.
No, their nuclear strategy, of course, and I think they'll fire at least two EMPs over the United States to make sure they get good coverage.
Okay. I think you're right.
Why
wouldn't they?
Give more than
so
less.
That right. Doesn't mess up the real estate with radiation or destruction. That's just for openers. Yeah. Then they can take out certain key targets and say, have you had enough? Is that enough? And maybe it'll stop there, but probably not.
Well, look at it this way. If they EMP us first, if the EMPs go up first, we have nothing to counter the incoming, the rest of the incoming missiles.
No, nothing. We're shut down. Now, as hardened as the electronics and computers that the military has may be, they're not all going to be successfully saved and continue to be operable. This EMP thing, it can't be overestimated. It puts us back in the 1800s. That's just the long and short of it. We're out of the game. We're no longer functional. One third of our nuclear-powered submarines are in dry dock right now. They're not operable either. One third. Think about it. Go ahead, please.
And listen, Russia has 30 Poseidon UUVs. We only have 11 carrier fleets, so that's 19 missiles to use on our major coastal cities.
They're
not going to use them all, okay?
No.
But they don't need to. Listen, they don't need to fire everything. Nobody will fire everything. But they're not going to play that game. You can't talk to the United States. They've proven in the past 2 years, as long as Blinken's been there, there is no diplomacy, there is no talking. So the only option they have is to destroy us so that we cannot rise back up again. Okay? They don't care what happens to us afterwards. If we might want to make a quaint little peaceful country over here, they're not going to object to that. They're not going to come over here and tell us how to live. The problem is not them trying to tell us how to live. It's that they are sick and tired of us telling them how to live.
That's correct.
So really, they just need to eliminate us. Okay. And let me go back just one more time to just some. This is biblical math. Okay. So it says in Revelation that only 144,000 Jews will survive this apocalypse. Okay. So we're not talking about how many people are going to heaven. We're talking about how many people survive this third world war, this nuclear war that's coming. Okay, that's 0.09% of the Jews. Half of the Jews in the world live in the United States. Okay,
right.
So basically that means that, say, 1 year from the beginning of the war until a year out, there will be about 335 million Americans perish. Okay, what's coming is hell.
That's okay? About all of it.
Hell comes. I want you to have that picture of Anthony Blinken in your mind because he's the man who is going to bring the destruction upon you. Okay?
You got it.
He's the guy who's going to do it.
Correct. Totally correct.
A stupid, ignorant person. He's a Secretary of State that has no concept of what diplomacy is. Diplomacy to him is you doing what he tells you to do, or he'll sanction you, or hurt, or embargo you. That's his idea of diplomacy. Do what we say, or we will threaten you with something. You know.
Don't forget, we have essentially a Jewish government here. There's a higher percentage of Jewish Americans in the so-called Biden administration than there has ever been in any presidency in our history. This is all being run by the same people, the same old people. They're doing it all.
Again, back to this biblical mathematics, Christ is coming to destroy Israel and the Jews. We're letting the Jews run in our country, so the Jews are the reason why you're all going to die, okay? I mean, just do the math.
Fair enough.
You know?
Fair enough. Fair enough. There's no other way to look at it. That's correct. It's the same people, always the same people. It's unbelievable. God.
Okay, so let me go on the United States. Mm-hmm. The United States has 5,244 strategic nuclear weapons, but they are old systems. None are hypersonic, and all are vulnerable to Russian air defense systems. We just have not put much money into them. We can certainly do massive damage to Russia, enough for them to not want to go to war. The military attitude in the United States is that we cannot win a nuclear war. This comes from the strategic thinking of Herman Kahn, another Jew, I might say. He argued that the United States should have a second strike capability so that the Soviet Union would not attack us because they would be destroyed in the second strike. This was called MAD, or Mutually Assured Destruction, and it was meant to be a deterrence against war. Therefore, the United States was sure that there would never be a nuclear war, so we quit preparing for one. Our civil defense budget was pared down as being unnecessary. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union increased their efforts to protect their people from a nuclear attack. They spent heavily on civil defense by building massive bomb and fallout shelters. Remember that Russia has twice the territory of the United States, but with only half the population. They did not have to spend as much. We thought they were wasting money. Anti-missile technology improved in the late 1960s because of the space program. However, building anti-missile missiles would just mean that the enemy would build more nuclear missiles so that they could swarm our anti-missile systems to overcome our missile defenses. This would be costly. In 1972, Nixon signed the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty with Brezhnev to stop development and research on anti-missile systems. The Soviet Union fell apart in 1992. The new enemy was Islamic terrorism. After 1993 and the first World Trade Center bombing, we worked ourselves into a frenzy about the threat from the Islamic world. It was overblown. It was an excuse for the government to spend more money on defense and surveil American citizens. After 9/11, we went full-scale paranoid. We were so worried that Iran was going to not launch a nuclear bomb on New York City that the new threat was not modern Russian nukes, but a homemade Islamic nuke. George Bush notified Russia that we were going to pull out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty because we were worried about a nuclear missile terrorist attack from Iran. We began spending money on developing anti-missile systems that could shoot down these rather basic missiles, okay? In 2002, the Missile Defense Agency started working in earnest to develop an anti-missile system that would shoot down short, medium, and long-range missiles. Since 1984, our main missile defense weapon was the MM-104 Patriot missile system. This system is now 40 years old. It is not a modern
system. It's never worked well either.
It's not cutting edge.
Patriot is a lousy weapon.
It has a range of 100 miles and traveled at Mach 3.5. It uses a proximity fuse which blows up to disrupt the flight and destroy the enemy missile. Because of its short range, it only has one chance at shooting down an incoming missile. There is not enough time for a second shot. They cannot shoot down an avant-garde glide vehicle that travels at Mach 27.
Okay, understand that. Hold on, Mitch.
Yeah.
The Patriot travels at Mach 3.5. Trying to knock down something that comes in at Mach 27?
We have junk. Yes.
Patriot junk.
Right. So the new system called THAAD, which means Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, was geared towards shooting down conventional Iranian missiles. It has a range of 120 miles and travels at Mach 8.2. It uses a kinetic kill rod that destroys the enemy missile on impact. It cannot shoot down avant-garde glide vehicles either. There are only a total of 7 batteries of these air defense systems with 6 launchers each and 8 interceptors per launcher. That is a total of 336 interceptors on the THAAD system. They cannot make much of a dent in the Russians' total of 5,889 strategic nuclear weapons. Not only do we not have any civil defense, but we also really have no appreciable defense at all against the Russian nuclear arsenal. To be honest, the THAAD system was designed to protect Israel from Iran and Korea and Japan from North Korea, not to protect the United States from Russia. The systems are deployed in East Asia and the Middle East, including a battery in Israel manned by U.S. troops. One of these 7 batteries is stationed in Israel in the Negev Desert. Okay. At this point, I should talk about Russian air defense capability so you can compare.
Let me slip this in real quick, Mitch, please. Sorry about this. This is important. It goes right along with what you're saying. Russia is producing artillery shells at a phenomenal rate. We're 5 years behind in trying to get caught up after sending all of our inventory to the Jewish regime in Ukraine. Every day, Russia produces 12,320 artillery shells costing $1,000 each. Imagine what U.S. costs are. I'll bet they're 5 times that because of the graft and corruption. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
So at this point, I should talk about Russian air defense capability so you can compare. Before we pulled out of the ABM treaty, Russia developed the S-400 air defense missile system. The 40N6E missile had a range of 240 miles, traveling at Mach 3.5. It has time for a second strike. It's got time for a second strike because it travels twice as far as ours does. Okay. Patriot has only half the range at 100 miles, but a speed of 3.5 Mach.
Right.
Most ICBMs travel up to Mach 20, so neither the Patriot nor the S-400 were intended to shoot down ballistic missiles, or ICBMs specifically. The S-500 Russian air defense system is geared towards shooting down ICBMs. The S-500's 77N6 missiles have a range of 370 miles and travel at Mach 20. Mach 20, not our 8.2 or our 3.5, Mach 20. They can take out any of our ICBMs, which none of them top 220 Mach, okay? Russia has ringed Moscow with these. The U.S. THAAD system has a range of 120 miles and a speed of Mach 8.2. While there are only 7 THAAD batteries, Russia has 40 S-500 batteries. Russia is already developing the S-550 air defense system. While Russia has been working fast and hard to protect itself from a nuclear war, America has done almost nothing. Our leaders regularly push close and cross red lines that could lead to a nuclear war, a war that the United States cannot possibly win. Our political and military leadership is delusional. When it comes to nuclear containment, Russia is realistically containing the United States and NATO. NATO has been pushing conventional containment of Russia since 1989. We are on their border. Are we going to push them to nuclear war? While NATO leaders talk openly about overthrowing Putin and breaking Russia into 17 smaller states, Russia has never said anything about overthrowing any NATO leaders nor of invading or breaking up any NATO nations. If you want to predict how and when World War III will begin, you should have an accurate picture of who the aggressor is. A good prediction is based on an unbiased, clear, and true assessment of all the players, okay? Russia has no desire to invade or destroy the United States. They just would like to be left alone, is what they'd like. But the United States will never leave anybody alone. We are the boss. America is the world's Karen. We're the Karen trying to tell everybody else what to do. And in the most annoying way possible, we tell them what to do. So, if you want to know how Russia looks at the United States, just remember, if you have a homeowners association and that Karen comes to knock on your door to tell you how to live your life, that is America. That is a picture of America right there. That's how Russia sees America. Okay. We're annoying to them. Russia's sick and tired of us already. They're sick and tired. They've had enough of this. And they're not going to feel bad about pushing the button. They know that we will not make a deal. They've even made statements recently that a century will pass before Russia would dare to even have any kind of relations or do business with Western Europe again.
A century. Wow. Wow.
So here we are,
What's your sense of this? If that other radar installation had been taken out, I think it was 2 days ago when the attack was mounted, we'd be at war right now, potentially.
I think so. If they successfully knock out one defensive radar, I mean, what would you do? Russia has to go to war. They have to launch a nuclear war.
They have no choice.
Yeah, we're blinding them. They cannot. That's if we blind them. Blinding them is an existential threat. They have to go to war. They're not going to let their people die, so they can be patient with us. I think they're kind of done with being patient with us.
I wouldn't blame them at all. I think no logical person would. No, they've been incredibly tolerant. I'm amazed.
We've just pushed red line after red line.
Well, we've mocked them, laughed at them. That just can't continue. This could happen any time. I don't believe that it's going to happen, though, without the prime directive ultimately having been reached and dictated by the Rothschilds. They run the world, basically. And if there's going to be a nuclear war...
We have to look at another thing, too. Why is Russia being patient? Russia's being patient because we have a bunch of babbling idiot clowns running our nation. I'm not just talking about the executive branch. I'm talking about the judicial branch, legislative branch. There's nobody in our government that is a patriot. There's nobody in our government that gives a shit about the American people. The only thing they care about is their own delusional power, and they live in a dream world where they think people are going to respond to them in a way that they just simply are not going to respond to them.
Totally right. Completely correct.
Let me give you an example. So we spent our best troops, our special forces, to Central Africa to try to hunt down Joseph Kony. And after years and years of our best equipment and our best soldiers over there trying to hunt him down, he's the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army in like Uganda and those countries. And so Wagner has put him on the run now. The Wagner Group.
Oh, they're still down
there.
They
found him.
Oh,
and
man.
They got him running. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So the Wagner Group, which are not Tier 1 Special Forces people, can do a job that Tier 1 Special Forces people cannot do.
Well, the murder of Prigozhin and his first in command under him was a very big deal in Russia. And that's probably why... Shoigu was recently removed. I just think that Prigozhin knew the corruption in Russia. There's corruption everywhere. Prigozhin
yes,
was talking
course.
About
you know, it's,
it.
Listen, there's corruption in China, and in China there's a death penalty for it. In America, right. You get a book deal and a movie made about you, you know?
All true. God. So we're really that close. I guess you could make it. You can make a case for any day now, right? Any day.
Yes, you can. I'm thinking that Russia may want to see us fall apart by November 5th. Okay.
I think they're trying so hard to make a reason
for Biden to win that that's going to be hard to pull off. And if Trump gets elected, America's over. And America's
the federal
over
government,
because Antifa and BLM right. will burn this country down.
The federal government will fail. We're going to end up being a state of, a state of states or a state of regions. Will be a national state of regions. And it'll be a loose confederacy. That's all it's going to be. And we'll have
have some peace, Jeff.
We might. That's what it might end up with. Let's hope. Mitchell, thank you very much. That was extremely interesting and very important. Bless you. Take care. And we'll talk to you next time.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
And good night.
Good night. Mitchell Henderson. Great job, Mitch. Okay. Monday is in the can. We'll be back with you tomorrow night on Tuesday in 21 hours. Thank you for being here. I hope you learned some things tonight. I try to learn every time. Back with you tomorrow.